Well, we've covered two paragraphs. Polished stone, not too hard to figure out, I don't think. Huh? He's getting stronger. After the italicized bit, first column, 317, after the italicized text. I continue on my way, accompanied by a finely polished stone. Now, finely polished piece of steel. So that would be the result of his having gone through all these fires, right? Now, we get into something a little complicated. The serpent. He plays a sweet magical song to make her believe that she was my soul. See where I am? A little farther down. When she was sufficiently enchanted, I spoke to her, and then we get that image. Yeah, maybe we should just look at that for a minute. Well, let me just read you one other thing, and then we can... No. The footnote to that image says what I was alluding to earlier. I'll just read you one sentence. Then she, the anima, appears in a church. Jung, I should back up. Jung is describing this painting in another essay. And then other essay, he says, the anima appears in a church, taking the place of the altar. So the soul becomes the altar. That's what I meant. And then I was just reading in this lovely little book, well, not little, lovely book, The Fountain of the Love of Wisdom. And what von Franz said, I dreamed a church had to be destroyed so that a tree could grow at that location. I think it's the same idea. That what he's now dipping into from time to time is the religious implications of this stuff. And it's not that he gets rid of the altar. He finds the altar as the development of our soul.
I wonder if now what we're looking at is from the previous image of Philemon, now we've gone into that church that he's standing on.
Mm. Okay.
And the reason I say that is the similarity of the little scintillae, golden stuff above my head was what was above Philemon.
It was?
Mm-hmm. Well,
oh, I see.
The gold.
Yeah. It's kind of like a, you could say a halo or...
Right. Uh-huh. Right. And then the moon was underneath him before, and there's the moon again. And I'm wondering if also if this little fellow over here on the left isn't Freud.
Well, can you show us?
Over here.
Right here.
This little guy here.
He looks more like I
do. He does, actually.
Did you notice that
who has turned away?
Having been in service, and he seems to have an arm missing with the sleeve pinned up.
Yeah, it looks like that. Uh-huh.
Gosh, you guys see such great
people. I'm thinking he's the only one that isn't looking at the animal accusing him. See, the rest of them are a crowd looking at her and accusing her.
I see.
And they're, waving hands at her and accusing her. He's the only one that looks at us. He's the only one that doesn't accuse her.
Except maybe this guy clutching the column on the right who seems to be in awe of her. And it's like looking at seeing a vision for the first time, who I sort of thought might be an aspect of Jung, who's seeing the vision.
and the female children too.
Really? If you look at them closely, they're waving things at her. Yeah.
They got nasty expressions on their faces. Mm-hmm. They all seem like a bunch of demons. One guy looks like he's throttling another guy, and
look at the cleric on the left, in the back there. And he looks angry to me.
Mm-hmm. And they're shaking fists at her.
Mm-hmm.
One guy
has a patch over his eye.
It's a great crowd.
It's a real crowd. I think they're the demons.
Well, when something struck me, I can't believe no one has seen.
Well, also, the light that appears over her, it's as though the stained glass window has turned into a willow tree. And that willow tree is made of light. And
can you show us what you're...
We can go.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Like her halo. Yeah.
So it's as though the stained glass window has turned into a weeping willow. Of
weeping
light.
Weeping willow?
Tree.
Where's that?
That's the shape of the crown of a weeping willow.
That's it.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
And inside it is it the wax? Let's see. I think it's the waxing. No, it's the waning moon inside. This is the waxing moon. Right. And,
the direction of
which side the light is dark.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if it's lights on the right,
it's a waxing.
Waxing.
Becoming full.
And on the left, you can see, just there, if you look in the book, you can see it more clearly. It's right here. But, and she's veiled.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, it's as though that crescent moon puts forth a protective mantle for her in the form of a tree of life. You might say. Here. And then... Well, those angels sure are Philemon like.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that they're... I think you know that they're different. And here's the figure that has a sleeve pinned up as though he's been in the war.
He kind of looks like Philemon, doesn't
he? He does.
Maybe he's the change that's about to happen. Because all those people are dressed in the attire of that time period, I would think. They look like turn of the century clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that this is the Arabic word for daughters.
Does he say that?
Yeah. And she is veiled as though she were herself Arabic.
Yes.
And then if you remember, Qutb says that in the Arabic world, spirit and matter were never separated.
Right. And that's why he's standing on a more mosque-like.
Which would, lead me to think it was a mosque.
Mm-hmm. I wonder too about the columns. Each one is different, and I don't recognize those as Roman or Greek columns. Sandy, you're probably more the expert there. Do you?
That one looked Corinthian, I thought.
But over here in the front.
Yeah, that the one beyond that, I can't make that out.
Mm-hmm.
She's looking. Her eyes are looking over to the right.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps at that figure who's standing up and eagerly visioning her, holding on to the column.
Everyone gets one.
She's looking at that character
holding onto the column.
Holding onto the column for dear life.
The heath, yeah.
No, that's not a Corinthian column.
I think it could be Jung's fragile ego at the moment.
That inner column, though, is definitely an image of Aquarius.
The wavy line.
Yeah. That one. Yeah. And that one.
Yeah.
my wedding ring, so I know that image very well. But the other two, I can't see them. But maybe it's other states of consciousness before you get to Aquarius.
The church later played with highly decorated capitals as well.
Yeah.
Medieval churches.
Well, it doesn't
or
look
Romanesque
like
churches. Romanesque churches.
She's so much bigger than the others. She's out very outside.
In that sense, she's like Athena in the pantheon.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And there's something. I guess I'm a viewer because I did through a series of columns.
Well, she said that at the altar.
She is the altar. I think that's the point. That's why it's war, magic, and religion.
Was that going to be your... You said there was something pretty obvious there.
Oh, that she's Muslim.
Yeah. Wow. Because of what she's made.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So she is the era... from the Persian...
It must be.
The Eros from the Persian era where spirit and matter wasn't split off together, or was together. And it seems to me she's underneath. So she is what Philemon stands. Remember we said he's standing on what he stands for?
Yeah.
So this is what's underneath that.
Yeah. And you see, now it's we're adding other elements, so he's being humanized. Mm-hmm. Well, it's some heavy stuff, I think.
And she was formed out of the snake. The serpent becomes her, right? Isn't that correct? Am I misunderstanding
right.
the progression here?
That's where we'll be going.
And he almost seduces the snake into by playing the music. I wonder if in order to get in touch with our souls, we have to take the first step.
Oh, absolutely.
Towards it. That it A friend and I were having this discussion, you know, why doesn't the soul just manifest? Well, because I think it's shy.
Yeah, and there's no free lunch.
Right, right. It takes some work.
You have to consciously decide to do the work.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. That was my question.
And I think, you know, summarizing where we'll be going, he calls the snake his soul, but she really isn't. She's the soul in her first form. And then he works with it to get the soul out of it. The snake in and of itself is just a mess. It's the mess of life. And that's where the soul often greets us.
So this snake might represent his entanglement with Tony.
Absolutely.
The wolf,
yeah.
And everything that's involved in that. But out of that is soul.
That's what I think.
I mean, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep, that's exactly what I think.
And what would it be that it's in the other one that it's under, it's at the foot of the base of that tree? And it's so entwined, it's so...
You mean back here?
The snake, yeah.
Oh, that it's the starting point? That snake is the starting point for... See, now he's in... You were kind of shocked when I was kind of critiquing Philemon, but now he's enlarging the picture. That these are all the ingredients that go into humanizing wisdom, which is you get it in the sinewy path of life. It's a mess. It's an entanglement. It's a goddamn it, and yet it's also the foundation of the process by which you can distill your soul. And this is what he's coming to. And this is such an offense to the Christian mind. Because they think the Spirit is pure. And in fact, it starts in the mess. He'll make it even more graphic as we go along. In the filth.
Energy. Energy is in the flesh.
Yes. And the accepting the energy there leads to this other dimension of wisdom. Now, we've seen this before, but remember, this is a spiral. We're coming back around. But now, where before it was either or, now it's all coming together.
Carol, where does it say that symbol to the left is daughter? I missed it.
It's in that footnote.
Oh, okay. I must have missed that footnote.
Let's see. It's footnote...
283?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, on the left hand is the Arabic word for daughter. I'm just trying to keep this somewhat simple, but you almost can't. You have to go into it in detail.
So those people would be the collective who is not Isaac.
I guess, yeah.
Version now. So, of the law?
Yeah, of what's sacred? That this is what's sacred. I read this and I read the other, and I kind of forget sometimes where I read it. But was it here or was it in Saturday where the comment was made that the problem Jung felt with religion is it no longer had an effect on people's wholeness? Is that Saturday? Mm-hmm. That, psychology and religion cannot be separated. Because look at all the, look at the religious talk you just started with Mr. Murdoch. You know, that man has no humanity, no wholeness, no grasp, and yet he would consider himself religious. And I bet you would have to go, too far to find people who'd agree with that. And the fact is that religion has produced more and more fragmented, judgmental, hypocritical people. And Jung's saying, how do we be religious and overcome all that? Even my 95-year-old mother was outraged. What is that going on in Indiana?
So it made CNN yesterday.
Did it?
Yeah.
In the New York Times,
that's
too.
A big race, because it's
going to throw
the balance of power in the Senate.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they're all upset about getting Reed out of the power roles.
Yeah, this is a quick detour, but where are the polls on Murdoch and Donnelly? Do you know? Does anyone know?
Mm-hmm.
There maybe aren't any.
I don't
know. I think they're very close.
But I read that they're not that far apart from their beliefs on this issue.
Oh, really? Donnelly, too?
Yeah, that's what I read.
Oh, my God.
He's smart enough not to
say it out loud. Right,
exactly.
Their book has
a lot of instances. All like the sacred when it starts. Yeah, he's from Catholic, too.
Right.
But
Murdoch
just...
He's telling
me
not to say it.
Oh, there's some good comments on the New York Times, though. In the New York Times, one man wrote in and said, so that would make the rapist an agent of God. This is God's will and path for that woman.
Yeah, anyway, we are all outraged. And he's an easy target to shoot at.
No, what you just said makes sense. The church that really produces more fragmentation,
mm-hmm.
more judgmental
mm-hmm.
people, in all these different factions, they're trying to pick one sentence and
mm-hmm.
cut it all apart and how it could be construed one way, this way, that. And instead of helping to heal into our wholeness,
mm-hmm.
it has fragmented us
mm-hmm.
and disunited us even
mm-hmm.
more.
Yeah, now, see, a lot of people say, well, that's why I'm an atheist. You can say, wait a minute, that's not the essential nature of a relationship to God, but we have to re-understand what is it to have a relationship to God. And you go through the soul. this way. And you go through the soul from the bottom up.
She's not on high. She's down below in the earth.
Okay. I'm just trying to hit the main points. Let me see. By the way, we are at January 29th, 1914. And we started October
1913. He's really going through it.
He's really going through it.
What month did World War One start?
August.
August 1914, right, Carl?
I think it might have been August 8th, I'm not sure.
August.
I think it's August 8th. All I remember is that's my father's birthday.
Just some details, and I think we can get to this page, maybe. He's worried that the soul's true will, the tree will bear no more fruit.
Now where are we?
That's top of second column 317.
Oh.
Then a little farther down these. Yeah.
Question.
Yeah.
I hate to drive you back.
That's all right.
But on the left-hand column, right after image 155.
Yes.
It says, she says to him, "I let grass grow over everything that you do." And he replies, "That sounds comforting." That, I find that to be just the opposite.
Right, but then he says, "I'm worried your tree will ultimately bear me no fruit."
But how could it sound comforting at all?
Because he doesn't want to go through this.
Oh, okay.
It's a seductive comfort.
You let grass grow over graves eventually.
Yeah, I'm burying everything you do.
Mm-hmm. He's struggling with, you know, how can I keep on going? Pretty soon he's going to say, I can't take this anymore.
He doesn't
think
that the seductive comfort is the positive
motive. Absolutely. Yep.
The negative.
Yeah, the negative mother that appears like the positive mother. Oh, let me, don't go out tonight. Stay home with me.
Right. And that's why she's
don't try too hard.
Finality is my element,
mm-hmm.
is what she says to him.
But that's the unredeemed soul.
Right.
And this is where it gets so confusing. Everything I'm going to say, you can find a contradiction. So we always have to ask, in what state is the soul when she says that? That's what's so hard about working with the unconscious. The unconscious says all these damn things, and if you're not shrewd, you get seduced off the path. That's why you need the ego. You know, the soul says, oh, come and stay with me. Sometimes you got to say no. Sorry. Sometimes you have to. And you've got to be able to decide what you do. That's kind of what our job is in my work, to help us ascertain this we go with, this we don't. Okay. Then she refers to the serpentine path. The second column before the break, where 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines up. So the soul as snake is the serpentine path. Now that's not the redeemed soul. That's the first appearance of the soul in the entanglement. But that's where you got to start.
Right, she's veiled. She still has not revealed herself fully, I think. Says she needs to remain veiled.
Well, she might be the end product.
Oh, okay.
See what you think as we go along. Yeah, I don't quite know why she is veiled, other than it's a reference to the Middle East.
Right.
Well, and that, and like the burning bush, you couldn't look directly on it.
Maybe that's it, yeah.
Yeah, can we truly know our souls fully?
No.
I don't think so. I mean, like the self, part of it will never be revealed to us.
Okay, she winds herself around his feet after the break. Now remember when she wound herself around him. This is not nearly as dramatic. So I think it shows he's integrated a certain amount of this instinctuality. Which I would say he could only have gotten from Tony Wolf. She says, now she starts showing her positive side. Emil is prepared, a union with all humanity. That's the same thing we saw earlier about as my street leads to the valleys. So there really is kind of a thread going on. Now, I think what we get for just a little bit from the rest of this page is madness and reason want to be married. The lamb and the wolf graze peacefully side by side. It's just we're beginning to see opposites united. The waves are dark and bright, rivers crushed together. She says, this is new for you. So the union of opposites has started to occur. Well, it has been occurring. Then, I think that's that page. Page Jesus. That's my religion. Get into this book.
I thought it was interesting. He says, tears and laughter are one.
Where's that, Jane?
The bottom of that.
Yeah, we'll come back to that idea, too.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, which I think it means he's accepting this Tony Wolf thing. It's causing him tremendous distress, and it's also giving him great joy.
I always think of that church in Delaware. I've never gone in it, but the name of it is Joy of All the Sorrow.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah,
Contra dance sounds appropriate.
Oh, but I mean, if, you know, the tears and laughter, I guess, are another opposite. You know,
yes, which he's accepting. That's what I make of it, Jane. That sound right to you?
I no longer feel like either. Like you're in that middle, neither nor.
So, over to 318. Again, why I think this has to do with Tony. You express yourself, she says, S318, first column, fourth line down, you express yourself emotionally and philosophically. You know that one can say all this much more simply. For example, one can say that you have fallen in love all the way from the worm up to Tristan and Isolde. Tristan, so the worm would be biological. And Tristan and Isolde would be a story of, what do I want to say?
Betrayal.
Betrayed love. Betrayed love, yeah. In the story, Tristan is sent to bring back Isolde, who is his uncle's betrothed, and they have an intimate relationship. So it's a again, it's a triangle
and a death
and a betrayal. And that's why I think that we're not off by seeing this. It's, of course, much wider than her, but he's learning the nature of the psyche, which is instinct and spirit work through a crucifixion. You end up in a mess. Sometimes. And that's the way it is. Now, religion again. So he's asking himself, what's the theological meaning of what I'm going through? Religion is still tormenting you, it seems. How many shields do you still need? Much better to say it straight out. And then comes, keep in mind that she has, as I read it, relatively affirmed his betrayal. She's not criticizing him for this. She's saying, well, this is what you're doing, buddy. Deal with it. And then we have this bit after that where they talk about understanding and thinking and, you know, how do I comprehend this? Thinking isn't going to do it. And then he gets to the point, I'm no longer up to this. And now what I think is so important, look how the soul changes her mind within a few paragraphs. First she says, you have fallen in love with Tristan and Isolde, as if affirming him in that, and then she says, you suffer, you fool. First she leads you into the mess, and then she calls you a fool. That's the way these figures work. See where I am? Okay. You see, religion, you see the Tristan and Isolde quote. Okay. Then all that stuff in there is just about understanding and thinking. And then what I thought was the important sentence is, she says, we see what the break is after the in the first column. Go up 1, 2, 3 lines. You turn your pain into pleasure. You are twisted, blinded. Just suffer, you fool. And what I just wanted to leave you with there is how the unconscious soul puts you in a double bind. And that's what you have to be very, very careful of.
Spell that out a little bit. What double bind is he in?
Well, first she leads you into a mess, and then she tells you you're stupid for having followed her. And that's what can break a person. And I think what you have to come away with two things. Realizing you can't trust everything the soul says. So next time she says, you know, follow me, you say, no, wait a minute, why? And this is completely contradictory. You learn sometimes I have to go with her and put up with her calling me a fool. But know what you're doing. Don't follow her thinking she's going to bring you rainbows. Follow her because you know this is a path I have to go. Part of it's going to be pleasure, part of it will be pain, and that's it. But she is very tricky. There was some of you heard me talk about this play, the love song of J. Robert Oppenheimer. It's performed here a couple years ago. And in it's a dialogue between, imaginary dialogue, but I felt it might have been actually quite accurate, between Lilith and Robert Oppenheimer, the guy who developed the bomb. And in the play, Lilith entices Oppenheimer from the beginning, make that bomb, because if you don't, the Germans are going to win. Then the bomb goes off, and Lilith says, "You murderer." Mm-hmm. That's the way she works. So he's walking into the complexity of the soul, and I think he's seeing it. And also what I feel the meaning of what preceded that, all this talk about understanding, this can never be understood with reason, but with images. So imagistic thinking is the only way to deal with this. There's nothing reasonable about what's going on here. Reason would say, don't get involved. You got a beautiful house, 5 kids, a lovely wife. What are you doing?
So where does forgiveness come in all this?
You mean forgiving yourself or? Mm-hmm. Well, I think you have to forgive yourself. And, you know, where I would see Philemon now is, let's say in Jung's life, realizing this is the way I got to go. And it's not just I'm looking to have fun or have pleasure, but I have a gift to give, and this is the way I have to go to generate what I give. And that's what allows one to forgive oneself. If you just did it for fun, and you knew you were hurting people you loved, that would be genuine guilt. I don't know how you forgive yourself for that. But I think if you are realizing you're developing something that you wouldn't have ordinarily developed, and it's your contribution to the world, that's the pedestal on which one can forgive oneself. And I think in Emma Jung's case, she knew that, and that's why she forgave him. She knew this was the way he was developing a point of view that would serve many generations. That's how I understand it.
And certainly she understood it. She and Tony were in therapy.
Yeah, and that they were part of this birthing process. You know, birthing process. You know, when I talk about this with other folks, you know, they'll say, well, that's selfish son of a bitch. No. It was not for him they did it. It's for the work that was coming out of him that they did it. And they both were mature enough to realize he's as much a tool as I am.
If you think about the traditional use of the altar as a place of sacrifice, and what you're sacrificing for is the soul.
Yeah.
That's totally different than
right.
just hedonism.
Right, absolutely. He sacrificed his respectability. He sacrificed a terrific amount of time and energy, not just to that relationship, but to where that conflict was pointing him, namely those 30 volumes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the sacrifice. And the difference in the sacrifice today and the sacrifice 2,000 years ago is the sacrifice 1,000 years ago was sacrifice of the body for the spirit. And now the sacrifice is the spirit for the body to recover a more genuine spirit.
But that his the way you're saying his understanding of that forgiving himself came after the experience.
Yeah, or...
I mean, not like he thought that all out and said, okay, I'll do this.
I think it must have been, I don't know, of course, but I would imagine it must have been something he was considering all along. That I need to do this, I don't know why, and then as he was involved, realizing I'm working out in me what is a general religious lack in understanding of our time. And what I'm coming to is something bigger than the three of us, namely Jungian psychology.
I don't think, I mean, it's my personal opinion that he fell blindly into
it. I think he wrestled with it.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, you can just see the way throughout this text that he has interacted with these unconscious images and figures. I just feel that he did that as well with making that decision.
Oh, absolutely. And we're going to be seeing pretty soon the devil comes in. And he's wrestling with the devil. And I think the devil in his life would be knowing he was doing something wrong. But he had to do that to get to his creativity. And where the devil is going to lead him to is to the images of creativity. But that's coming up. But I just wanted to alert you to this flip-flop nature of the unconscious soul. She dangles the carrot of pleasure, and you take it, and then she says, "You're dumb. You're dummy." That's the soul when it's still in somewhat of a serpent form. That's the treachery of the serpent. But now he's getting conscious of that, which is why the serpent's bite doesn't poison him.
Well, it says here that he has protective armor on, and that made me think that that's where he's incorporated what Philemon stood for.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, the truth is, he is a fool. I mean, I'm not convinced she's saying anything that isn't true or really doing a switch on him like Lilith did on Oppenheimer.
Uh-huh.
I think he's a fool. She's just saying, you have to do it, and you're a fool, and you like it,
Well, I always think he wanted her. He was expecting her to say, "Well, aren't you some fine fellow? you've listened to me. You know, you've followed your dreams. You're following your bliss." And what he expected was a pat on the head, and what he got was a flipped point of view.
But as in many fairy tales, it's the fool who finds the gold.
Right. I mean, it's fool understood in its deepest sense.
Yeah.
But, when you're, as remember, the mothers of the neighborhood were meeting to decide whether their kids should play with his kids, it doesn't feel so good.
Because of this affair or because of other things?
Well, just because of who he was. One of his daughters mentioned that in the tape. The mothers met and decided whether or not they should allow his kids to play with their kids.
What did they decide?
I would imagine yes, but I don't know.
The kids probably decided it.
Yeah.
The same thing happened to Martin Luther King when he was a little boy. And that started him on his path. He wasn't allowed to play with another child, so he needed it to go back to his life. And I mean, he didn't even know the kid was white and he was black.
Yeah.
That started him. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't fight.
So is the serpent's bite always sometimes it's a bad thing, sometimes it's a good thing?
Here I think, yes, exactly. Here I think it's bad because if her calling him a fool had lamed him, then he would have been poisoned. So the serpent's bite is her saying, "You fool."
So sometimes a serpent's bite heals, other times it lames.
Yes. And he says, "That's because I have studied the art of stepping from the left foot onto the right and vice versa, namely the pair of opposites, right? Which others have done unthinkingly." He is doing it thinkingly from time immemorial. And this then is how you transform the unconscious soul into the conscious soul. Serpents raised herself again. There at the bottom, she says, "So you have finally noticed this, but I spoke to her smilingly. The sinuous line of life could not escape me in the long run."
We've learned to go from conscious to unconscious.
Yes, and to accept And except that the soul greets us in an entanglement. And that he had to go through this entanglement.
I remember when we were talking about Philemon, and we were talking about Philemon, I mean, not Philemon, but Gilgamesh,
mm-hmm.
who starts out blind and then is lame. Is that correct? Am I getting those right? And then we end up, we start out blind and then are blind.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, and then he ends up seeing. And we're blind.
Right. We blindly follow, and he's lamed then.
Yeah.
And so here to me, breaking off the serpent's tooth is like the laming of the self-image or the soul.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's using them intertwined here.
Probably not yet clear.
Okay.
Let's just go a little bit, and then we'll stop. Now, apropos where I started with, where is truth and faith? Where is warm trust? You find this all between men, but not between men and serpents. That's what we have to add. Then he talks about Christ as the serpent, Christ as the Antichrist as the serpent. And I think that's the main thing. Oh, well, I'm trying to rush to lunch. We should look at, except maybe my electronics have stopped us for the day. It said, you've done enough. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's frozen. Maybe we should stop here. Where have we gone? We've got, let's say we've gone up to the paragraph, why did I behave? And everybody see where I am? I'll say we went that far. And what we'll start doing then is thinking through what I've just said. The nature of the serpent, the nature of the soul, the nature of transformation, and how this process works from instinct to wisdom. So we're going back to Philemon, we're putting it in that bigger context. And I think I had you read to 321. We won't get any farther than that, I don't think. Do you? I had you read to a story of the initial 171.
Mm-hmm.
Well, just for the heck of it, why don't you read over to a story of the initial 172? That's just a little bit. Just, I don't think we'll get near there, but you never know. Questions? Anyone have a headache? It's tough going, but I think, you know, it's rich still. You feel that? Okay. So we'll meet in 2 weeks.
Thank
you. Thank you very much.
We're almost out of pictures.
We're almost out of pictures. Oh, and I think we will see.
On a climax, we're seeing some of the juiciest pictures of all right here.
Yeah. And the really important ones are still yet.
Yeah.
The window on eternity and the
castle.
And the castle. Yeah. So I think we're going to see the intensity slowly decreasing, but I might be wrong.